And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake up.
Opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Welcome to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. These are Conspiracy Queries. I am Alan Park. I thank you for joining the show. If you are new to the show, I try to talk about things that I don't really know the answers to, but I figure some people do, and they kind of hide them from us. And it's in their best interest to hide it from us. I understand that, you guys. Sure, that's how you make money. But it's in my best interest to uncover what these things are. These different strictures of control. For example, we have the fear of ISIS right now, which is not just the 70s television show that some of you older folks might remember, but equally silly. Now, I know people have been killed. There's some horrible stuff going on. And when I have inferred on the net that it's fake, I don't mean it's not really people aren't really getting hurt. What I mean is, who is putting it together and how is not what we are being told with ISIS. You know, ISIS is just the new Al-Qaeda. Remember how frightening they used to be? Oh, wow. Now apparently we're working with them in some capacity to help stomp out the threat of ISIS. Okay, right. I'm just having a really tough time with the constant fear. I mean, imagine living in a world 10 years ago if you said, there'll be Ebola and there'll be ISIS, even worse than Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Remember the Taliban? They were, oh, that was terrible. Now we're all the way up to ISIS. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that talks about, you know, how fake it is and how phony it is. Let me tell you about some pictures that are floating around the net of ISIS driving around in their trucks with their guns, and they're all crazy. Oh, yeah. But it looks like the trucks apparently were the kind of trucks, they're Toyota, and they get modified for special forces in the States the same way they are modified in these pictures that are floating around on the net with machine gun mounts and, you know, double cab models, larger brush guards in the front, and just sort of tricked out a little bit the way Americans can do and Canadians can do. But these trucks weren't in Iraq prior to ISIS driving them around. So who knows where they got that fantastic gun rack in the back there? Who knows? But that's ISIS for you. Now, the show here is accepting donations. If you are interested in sending me some Bitcoin, that's great. You give me a Bitcoin, and then apparently in 3 weeks, I got enough money to buy a house. I don't know how that works, but I do know it's getting up some people's snout, and we will talk about Bitcoin in an upcoming show because I think it's something that a lot of people are getting into now and sort of quietly. I'd also like to put out the word that the new premier of Alberta, his name is Prentice. That's all I'm going to call him. I'm never going to call him by his first name. I don't know the guy, but he is the new premier, and he says that Canada needs new markets for Alberta oil. So if you've seen how they make the oil in Alberta, if you've seen what it does to the land, put your order in now. They need some more customers. Okay, now we're going to go to our interview pretty soon. We have a fantastic guest today. She is someone I've known for many years. Her name is Sydney White. No, not the terrible movie from several years ago. Sydney White, the investigative journalist. Sydney spent some time, a lot of time actually, at the UN, articling there and getting behind-the-scenes information. And after a while, she started to realize, wait a second, this information is counter to what a lot of us are being told, and just counter to a lot of programs that Sydney understood were for one reason, and then she found out that actually other things were afoot. So she has taken that awareness and rolled it into an investigative journalist kind of lifestyle, and she lectures on this, and you can go catch her at the University of Toronto in her Studies in Propaganda with Sydney White. We're going to go to her right now, actually. Let's go to our interview. Here we are. I'm with Sydney White right here as I speak. We're not live in person together because this is a phone call, and Who is Sydney White? She is a researcher for decades now, a researcher and a lecturer. She's a person that's going to help you understand what the heck is going on out there. She teaches a course that is starting up soon at the University of Toronto. Sydney White, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Good. So are you looking forward to starting off another course of enlightenment?
I always say I'm going to quit, and then I get so angry about things, I say, okay, one more year.
What kind of things make you angry?
Injustice, lies.
Oh, so you're always angry then.
Yeah, stupidity is a big one. So do you want me to tell you the name of the course?
Yes, I do. Tell us all the name of the course that you offer every year.
Yeah. In 2000, the University of Toronto came to me and several other professionals, not necessarily in my field, but they asked us as alumni of the university, would we like to contribute to the community as volunteers representing the university? So I was one of the 30 people or so that said yes. I think now I may be the last one still going because it's 15 years, and I'm still doing 10 lectures, 10 in the spring, 10 lectures in the fall, and the course is called Studies in Propaganda. I've been told by another professor in England that mine is the only course in North America. His is the only one in England and possibly Europe. So that's what I do. And of course, the lectures are free.
All right. And you do this, you say you do it twice a year. So that's in the fall and then again at what, in springtime?
Yeah, in the spring. And it's called Studies in Propaganda. It will resume on Monday, October the 6th. It's always on a Monday. It's always between 6 and 8 p.m. And you can always get the exact room and building if you call my number about a week before the course starts, this time about October 1st. None of us really know our rooms until about a week before.
Oh, it's very covert, so, I'm sure.
Yeah, so the people call me on October 1, I will have the message there where we are exactly located. So once I give my phone number, I guess we'll continue.
Okay, so
I'll give it out now. It's 416-787-0592.
All right, that's the number. So if you want to go to hear Sydney lay it all down in the various categories that she has seen to put all of this information in, it's a good choice. You're going to learn a lot. So, Sydney, you're just about to kick off a new season, and what are the... You're not even sure yet if it's going to be 8 or 10 lectures.
Well, it depends on how many weeks before the first week of December, but always I do 8, and possibly it could be 1 or 2 more. I haven't figured that out yet. So I will be doing that in the next week or so.
Okay, well, let's dive right into the topics at hand. Of course, this is going to go through like pretty much October and November together. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. What are the topics at hand this coming semester?
Okay. And I do keep updated. I never teach, do the same lecture twice. It's always updated, no matter what the title is.
Well, there's always more stuff going on for you to talk about. I guess that's...
No kidding. So, and I always give 10 hard copy handouts so that people can actually take them home and check on what I've said or do some research themselves. I'm not there to talk about my theories. If I can't back it up, I won't hand out the paper. But people always get research papers.
This is like paper right off a tree, you mean?
Yeah. Okay. They get hard copies, 10 of them, each lecture. That means don't depend on me. You can go and research what I've told you. And the people usually like to do that.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, so what will, let's say, week one, what will that encompass?
Well, I just came back from New York. I did the 9/11 Museum. So the first lecture on October the 6th will be on what I saw there. And it was astounding, I have to say. It was also very disturbing.
Okay.
So I will be discussing that as the first lecture.
The 9/11 Museum. Now, who built this museum? Whose museum is it?
I'm assuming that the state or the federal government had a hand in putting the museum up.
Okay.
I'm assuming that. Maybe it's not true. I don't know.
They were able to get the permits to build it. Okay.
Oh, well,
yeah, they pulled a few strings.
It's been built for several years, and many people, maybe 1,000 every day, go there, go through. Huge rooms, about 6 rooms. It'll be at least 3 hours before you get out. And I was quite astounded at the technology, the films that go on in every room. You walk into the first, and the ceilings are enormously high. You go into the first room, and you hear all the sounds of what happened on that day. It's the screams, the fire engines, everything, and you're seeing pictures of what happened, and you feel as if you're surrounded by all these sounds, and people screaming, jumping down, the dust coming down, the police talking about what's going on. It's just a big cacophony. It's a complete surrounded by
sensory
all the
attack.
Noise.
Yeah, you're just, is this like you're in some kind of tunnel while this is happening? Have they got you captivated at this
around.
Point?
The whole room has sounds coming from the ceiling, the walls, the floor. Hmm. According to the sounds, you feel like you're there. But that was the most honest part of the museum. I was quite disappointed to find, well, I should have expected it, that the tale told by the commission was repeated once more.
The 9/11 commission, and which part of the tale are you taking issue with here?
Oh, well, it's not myself taking issue. It's already been proven that the cell phone calls could not have been made from Flight 93. That was proven by a professor friend of mine. Professor Dewdney was on television describing those cell phones cannot be used at that altitude.
A.K. Dewdney, is that who?
That's right. I know him personally. And people were sitting there. There couldn't be any pictures, of course, but they were sitting there listening to these phone calls. And most people, I would say, believed all of that. I didn't have time to make a survey. But, and other things like the Pentagon, there was a tiny bit of what looked like part of a Cessna, supposedly from the large airplane that hit the complex, but it didn't. There was no plane. They flew a plane over it at the same time the bombs went off. So they made it look to people in the distance as if the plane had crashed into the building. It did not. It merely flew over. And I talked to people working in there.
This is the Pentagon.
This is the Pentagon, yeah.
Okay.
It was not hit by a plane, no. It was all bombs. They were renovating a certain section of the Pentagon, and the bombs went off in there. So, and I talked to two of the people that were in there that day, and they said, no, it was bombs. We felt them. We felt the floor reverberate. There was no plane. And, of course, if you've ever seen the crash of a plane, there was no debris on the Pentagon lawn.
Yeah,
and
that was amazing.
Yes, nothing. And Barbara Honegger, who came to Toronto a couple of years ago for an inquiry, we had a long talk. She said, no, it was all bombs. We were in there. But they had it still in the museum, that it was a plane that hit the Pentagon, and
there was a gentleman, are you familiar with, there was a gentleman that I recall seeing some video named Barry Jennings, and he said that he heard bombs going off as well. Barry is no longer with us, apparently. Mm-hmm. Met with a speedy end. Don't know all the details there, but gee whiz. Anyway, he talked about bombs inside the building, and then there was the janitor, one the fellow who was of Latino extraction, and he was Rodriguez, maybe? And
that we're talking about the two towers now.
Yeah.
I'm still on the Pentagon.
Oh, okay, sure.
Barbara Hanniger herself was in there. It's been proven there was no plane, but that's what they're saying in the 9/11. And of course,
well, then they say, "What is the theory?" Then what's your theory? And then they say, "Well,
There's no mention of bombs.
Yeah.
Nowhere in the museum is there anything said or shown about a bomb of any type. That is left out."
Yeah, I'm sure that's the same way with the Alfred P. Murrah Museum, if they have one of those also.
So I was kind of disappointed. So,
But you knew that was going to happen, and you knew they weren't going to...
Well, of course. I enjoyed other things in New York.
Okay, good.
On the last day.
I hope you didn't hang your trip on that, yeah.
Oh, no. No, no. I've been an investigator too long. I was at the UN when I was 18 in the press department. And I've been an investigative reporter all my life. So when I came back here in 97, I was asked to write for Discourse and Disclosure, which I did, about 75 articles until they ended in 2005.
And what was that again, Discourse and Disclosure? What was that?
It was a national periodical, which went for many years. And when I came back in 97, I was asked if I would write for them. And I did that right up until 2005. And after that, I kept writing for local papers. But in 2000, I started doing my lectures as well. So I'm still writing and I'm still lecturing.
Okay. And all right. So that's the first lecture will be all about 9/11 and what you learned in the museum.
Yeah. About buildings 5 and 6, basically, and why they're never mentioned. I discussed it with Richard Gage. He knew nothing about 5 and 6. So I will be discussing that in my first lecture.
Okay, so there's going to be some certain areas of 9/11 that are not usually discussed.
That's right.
Fantastic. Okay, well, you could say that about almost anything about 9/11, though. But, you know, you've got some different angles here. And were bombs involved in these other buildings as well? Can you give us a teaser?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The two towers were bombs. And Building 7, it was demolition. It was straight-out demolition, which uses bombs. The same in Building 7. And, of course, we all know they predicted. They were saying 7 had fallen. The announcer, and there was Building 7 right behind her on the film, still there for half an hour when they had said it had already come down. So these things are planned. But the best thing about the plan I will discuss in the first class is that anyone who wants to can now get actual proof that it was planned at least by 1996.
Okay.
And I will tell them how to get that proof.
All right, let's just take a break for a second here. You're going to tell me, we're going to come back right on this. Okay, Sydney, I want to talk about what was it that happened in 1996 that you can so clearly put your finger at as something that triggered or was an awareness of the beginning of 9/11. We'll be right back on Sirius XM Channel 167. You're listening to Conspiracy Queries. All right, we are with Sydney White, and she is lecturing at the University of Toronto on Monday nights, starting soon in October. And you should go there and learn some things that will blow your mind and make a lot of sense about things. But now, Sydney, you were talking just now about this 9/11 mystery of the other buildings that went off. And then you said something about 1996. Can I just get you to go back on that a little bit and bring us to the point.
I will be speaking on buildings 5 and 6 in the class, but
okay.
I do want to explain to people now that they themselves can get absolute proof that this was all planned as at least as far back as 96. Now, this is a little story, and I'm going to start at the beginning. It'll take about 5 minutes.
Okay, go ahead. You've got the time. You've got the floor.
Just take the whole thing and write down what you need to write down.
I am definitely writing things now.
Okay, I'm talking about this starting in Hollywood, which, of course, is the propaganda ministry for North America. In 1996, a very young Top Gun scriptwriter had sold the most expensive script ever sold to date in 96 for $4 million. The name of the movie was The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Okay.
Now, Gina Davis was in the movie.
And Sam Jackson?
I'm just going to be very careful with this so they get everything I'm saying.
Okay. Yep.
So the story was about a woman who has been a CIA agent. Through some accident, she loses her memory, gets a job in a small town as a teacher, not thinking she's ever going to get the memory back, starts a new life. And in another accident, this is the script, she reclaims her memory. Now, she is seen in the small town in a Christmas parade sitting on one of the floats because she's a school teacher. And someone that she has had an incident with years ago, a person now in prison, sees her on the TV in the prison. Now, I won't tell you what happens after that. However, as you get into the film, and as she's regaining her memories, and certain people don't want her to regain them, let's just say it that way, two-thirds of the way through the film, we have a scene. In this scene, four or five actors playing the parts of the FBI, CIA, are explaining to her, now that they've caught her, they think, they're explaining to her what went on. Now, the first one says, yes, we were involved in the bombing of the towers in 1993.
And who said this?
I'm quoting the script. Just let me quote the script. It's being said by several actors who are acting the parts of CIA people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll just get on with it to the end. I'm quoting now from the film, from the script directly. The first one says, oh yes, we were involved in the 93 bombing of the towers. And then, this is the next sentence, he says, but of course, we can't fake the deaths of 4,000. That will have to be real. And of course, we'll blame it on the Arabs. I am quoting directly from a scene in the film.
This is The Long Kiss Goodnight.
That's right. The Long Kiss Goodnight. You can get it on VHS if you happen to find an old one.
Or
you can send away for the VHS or the DVD of the film.
Yeah, okay. So that's there. You might be able to find that very phrase on YouTube right now. Who knows?
Absolutely. I know somebody who did send away and got a copy of it off the net. I don't know. I can't give you those particulars because my copy is an actual old copy of a VHS.
Right. Yeah.
But there you have a prediction in a film, and the number of the dead are quoted. Blaming the Arabs, that's quoted. And the buildings where it will happen is quoted. Do you need any more to prove that that was thought about at least by 96?
Well, you know, if it was the implosion that a lot of people say, that I'm sure that would take a long, long time to get it done.
It would take a lot of planning.
In a covert manner as well, as best as possible.
And the script writer, his name is Shane Black, very well known. He had done the Last Boy Scout. He had done all the Lethal Weapon films. He was at the top of his game, and he was in his late 20s. And he got $4 million for that script. And when the film came out, they must have realized what they'd overlooked or who inserted that in the script. They blacklisted it. They gave it horrible reviews. They cut the distribution almost down to nothing. And Shane Black, if you look him up on the net, didn't resurface till about 2005. And nobody's heard him doing anything big since. So... absolutely, that's proof of when it was thought up, and that there was people in the United States who were in on that.
Yeah. I wonder how many years it'll be before, you know, usually it takes so long. Like, we're just starting to kind of sort of get close to some things about the JFK assassination. You know, it takes forever to get this stuff out.
Well, if you look this up on the net, this film, you're going to get a lot of stuff on that and a lot of stuff about Shane Black. It is on the net. I didn't even bother looking it up. I had had that VHS for a long time. I showed it to a few friends, and they made me replay that scene at least four times. They could not believe that it was so definite and had such particulars.
There's a lot
of course, there's 4,000 dead. There's not 3,000 dead. There's 4,000 dead because there's 1,000 missing. And, of course, they're dead because they were turned into powder. So the numbers are right. And the buildings are right. And this was stated in 96.
There's a lot of that kind of thing in Hollywood, though. There's a lot of predictive. I mean, even the show The Lone Gunman, you know, that came out the summer before 9/11 happened. Are you familiar with that show?
No, I'm not, but I haven't seen a film yet that gave the particulars of how many dead and the buildings were stated.
No.
I've seen a lot of movies with so-called predictions, but they're very vague.
No, this was there was a plane going to fly into the World Trade Center.
Into the tower.
That was part
of
the purpose, and then, you know, they carry it off and they just managed to avert it at the last second.
That's right.
But then later on, the president of the United States says, no one knew anybody would think that they could do something like that. You know, it's like, oh, come on. Anyway.
It was planned. It was planned to drive planes into buildings back in 62. They got it from that. They didn't get it from any prediction.
Sure, you're talking about Operation...
Go ahead.
No, you take it. Is that what you're talking about, Operation Northwoods?
Yes. Yes, I am, and they got it from that because in no film, and I have seen a lot of them that you're talking about, did they give specific numbers of the dead, nor did they give the specific buildings. They gave buildings and planes. They did not mention how many dead. Then they did not mention the site that it would happen on. It was only in The Long Kiss Goodnight that these particulars were stated.
Wow, that's amazing.
Only that film.
So it's hard to know what. And then this Shane, this character that wrote it, you're saying his career has pretty much petered out from there.
Absolutely. I'm amazed he's still around. He was at the top. He was the top script writer, and his script of that film was the highest number ever offered for a script, $4 million. In 96, no one had ever sold a script for $4 million. And this is the film, and this is the one that they didn't distribute and cut right down to nothing.
Is it possible, and have you heard this as a devil's advocate, that because they paid him such a high amount of money, and because the film did not do that well at the box office, and maybe they didn't get their money back, maybe that's why they would say, oh, yeah, they didn't want to work with this guy again because, you know, it cost them so much money the last time and it didn't work out.
No, nothing like that.
Okay.
No, it was nothing like that at all. They were quite happy to give him that money, and he'd already proven himself many times that he wrote scripts that made a lot of money for them.
Okay.
So it was strictly what was said in the script. They only discovered after it came out. And, of course, it hadn't happened then. So a lot of people who heard it didn't think anything of it.
Right.
It hadn't happened. But after it happened, people like me who had that old copy, that's why it ended up on the net, suddenly thought to themselves, hey, I remember that being mentioned in that movie.
Yeah.
Wasn't a big movie. I've only got it on VHS. So they replayed it, and that's why it's on the net now. They
yeah.
thought, come on, that's not a coincidence. Get real.
Yeah. All right, so that's lots of new 9/11-related information to start things off and some new information about Buildings 5 and 6. And people are just only starting to find out about Building 7, and here you come with information about 5 and 6.
Yeah, I talked about it with Gage, and
yeah.
I told him what happened, and he said, oh, my God, but this is what he said. He said, I can only discuss 9/11 from the viewpoint of my career as an architect. He said that to me, so I'm quoting him now, but I did tell him what happened, and I'll be quite happy to do it in the first class.
Okay, great. All right, what is... We just have a couple of minutes here before the next break, but why don't we start talking about some of the other classes following the 9/11 class? What other topics will you be touching
well,
on?
Well, the other one I always talk about is debt and depopulation.
Okay, that's a good one. Debt and depopulation.
Yes, D-E-B-T, like debt mm-hmm. and depopulation.
Okay.
Then I do bankers' bailouts and Iceland.
Oh, sure. They got themselves out of trouble.
Yeah, a lot of those bankers who supposedly committed suicide, you have to realize that their companies would get the dead peasant insurance for them.
Oh, that's nice.
It's called Dead Peasant Insurance. Corporations take it out on their employees. The employees don't necessarily know that they do. But when they die, the company gets a whacking insurance money.
Hmm.
They call it Dead Peasant Insurance.
Not heard of that. Okay. Well, that's
no,
pretty...
No, most people haven't. So I'll be talking on Fukushima.
Okay.
The chemtrails. HARP, the weather wars, and electronic harassment. Other subjects will be history of the assassinations of U.S. presidents by people who don't want governments creating their own money. Then I do war and urban renewal. And, of course, we'll be discussing the new soldiers that will be controlled by remote. And one of the headings is the NAU, the police state. The NAU is the North American Union, which they're pushing. First, the EU, the European Union. So the title of that lecture is First the EU, then the NAU, and finally the FU. We'll be discussing the law of forfeiture.
Oh, that's an actual law.
That's a law. We have it in Canada.
The FU law.
That's right.
That's exactly what it is.
They can take everything you have and you'll never get it back, and they don't even have to charge you.
They don't have to charge you with something to do that. That's what you're saying?
No.
That's in Canada?
No. That's right. We have it in Canada. It just has a different title. It came in when Harris came in.
Oh, Mike Harris, he was the premier of the province back in the good old days. We're talking with Sydney White right now. She is a researcher and a lecturer, and she knows a lot of things. And we're going to come back and pick her brains for some more of those things when we come back after these words on Sirius XM Channel 167. You're listening to Conspiracy Queries. Okay, we are back with Sydney White. And Sydney, you were telling me about some different topics. Tell us a little bit. Let's take a little stroll into, was it two separate topics when you said war and urban renewal, or was it war and urban renewal?
Well, it's war and urban renewal, because war is basically a business.
Okay.
Anyone wants to look it up, General Smedley Butler wrote a book on war, a very short, easy-to-read book. But basically, he listed what profits the corporations were making before the war and what they were making when the war started. And so it's a business. It's for profits. And, of course, the bankers back it up, instigate it, and everyone's in debt at the end of it. And that's why it's called urban renewal. For instance, first they bomb in Japan and in Germany. They did a lot of bombings, and then they got the contracts after the war. Halliburton was doing contracts way back then. They would come in and do the urban renewal. It's still happening now in Iraq and what else. The contracts are drawn up before the war starts.
Some would say it's the purpose of the war.
Well,
more
yeah.
business.
That's right. That's what it is. And the contracts are drawn up. People go in, smash everything flat. And then Halliburton and other belonging to a lot now, people in the White House have all those businesses. But they draw the lots, they make the contracts, and then they have the war.
And what's your take on why do you think it is that, as you sit here stating this matter-of-factly and understanding, you know, the ruse that is used to move ahead once again with the drums of war, why are you so comfortably knowledgeable of it? How do you figure most people don't even really think about this kind of thing? How are they getting away with most people not being too concerned about this type of thing?
Well, number one, the mass media is just, you can't get any news from them. Lots of omissions and lots of false news. So people don't really know anything. And secondly, they're so hard put to survive now. The way the debt money has run the world with so much interest on everything, people are dying from usury. They have no jobs. Things are being shut down. So if you're crushing and trying to survive, you're not going to be thinking about politics or becoming an activist if you're trying to just keep food on the table. And that's the way it is. The debt money system has us all behind a huge usury block. And of course, the bankers love war because that's when they make all their money. And the people that are against them a lot of the times have to end up going to war because there's no job. They get to kill off all the people they don't like, the commoners, you know, and the great unwashed, they call them, put them in the army, and nobody has a job anywhere. And people are, they're too harassed trying to survive. I'm retired, so I can do all these protests and I can volunteer and help out with information. But if I were young now at this time looking for work, they've got huge debts from university. Nobody can afford a home. They're gone back to living with their parents. It's ludicrous, and it all comes out of the fact that governments no longer print their own money. They get the banks to print the money when they could print it just as easily, and we're paying interest to use our own money. It's quite silly, very silly. But any presidents who've tried to go back to printing our own money have gotten bumped off.
Yeah.
So and the same in this country. So the one big problem behind the wars and the misery and all of that is that private people like the Rothschilds, they're the head of the scam, are charging interest on numbers they just print. When we, the government, can print our own money without any interest on it. All our debt comes from interest on money that hasn't even performed yet.
Now,
it's interest on new money. It's a crime.
Let me ask you this, Sydney. I know that you at least once, because I saw it, but probably more than just once, I saw you at City Hall in Toronto with a mayor at the time. And
Miller.
They were David Miller. And they were, what was the nature of that particular hearing and what was the information you were bringing to them?
Well, it's about the new transfer fee. When people buy an ordinary house or a property, they were paying huge transfer fees, which just went to the government, $300-$400, maybe a couple of thousand, depending on what kind of a house they bought. It was a transfer fee. I went down there with somebody else, I think a legal person, and I was saying, you're trying to squeeze money out of people like this, ordinary money, not wealthy people. People are just buying a house, and you're squeezing all this extra money out of them when, if you need extra money, you could print the 50% that our Bank of Canada used to print. Our Bank of Canada can print 50% of our money with no interest on it, and that's how we got our health care. And that's why the government didn't have to gouge people. We were printing. Half of our money was printed by us, not the Rothschilds. And we can still do that. But I was explaining that to City Hall, and obviously they tried to stop me. They tried to cut me off at the pass. And I said, well, as a citizen, I feel I should let you know this, so I'm letting you know. That's why we're out of money. We can't, we're not allowed, although our charter says we can, but we have been prevented by people like the private bankers, all of them, Goldman Sachs, the Rothschilds. They don't want any government printing its own money. That means that government will have all the money they need to do everything they need to do for the people, education, housing, all of it. We had all that when we printed our own money, even though it was just 50%, that's how we got everything.
And
now,
how did this change? How did this change over from that system you're talking about to this other, more terrible way?
Well, our government sold us out. People who still think governments care about their people, except maybe Iceland. If they think those governments care, I'm sorry, they're living on another planet. They've all sold out to the banker. Except for the few they've just made wars on recently. Now, Iraq, all the people got money. The government gave the money from the oil to the people in Iraq. They did it in Libya. And I don't know what happened in Syria, but I know that most of the countries they are going into and raping, pillaging, causing civil wars, everything they've done since the original 9/11. And every time they go into those countries, they set up the Rothschild Bank. They take all the resources so that people don't get another dime. They're all killed off with DU. They get in Libya, Iraq, and they're going onwards.
DU, what is that, depleted uranium?
Oh, yeah, the depleted uranium.
Okay.
So so they're just making sure that all the countries where they want to rob the oil, put up a Rothschild bank, that most of the people are going to die anyway. And that's what's going on now.
That's a grim picture.
It's all about the banking and the people not being allowed to get any goodness from the money, their resources earn. So they went to Saddam, the U.S., when he was pally with them, and they said, hey, we want you to privatize your oil now. And he said, no, I can't do that. It goes to the people. So that's what happened to the bad guy, Saddam. He didn't have as many in jail as Bush did.
Sydney, let me ask you this. As a former member of, what was it called, Cummer,
Committee on Monetary and Economic Reform.
Right. So as a member of that particular group of folks, where do you see, like when I look down the road, I think this is so unsustainable. I don't know what can happen here. What I mean is when I was a kid, I remember older men, you know, telling me like, oh boy, when I was a kid, boy, you could get all this candy for a nickel. And I was in there with my quarter and my 50 cents, you know, buying things. And mm-hmm. now that quarter, 50 cents, that's not buying any candy. That's like, you know, any candy is $2.29 or, mm-hmm. and everything is just so, you know, when I was a boy, I used to get butter for a nickel and everything. That's like 10 bucks. Where, how do people think this is going to be
what
okay?
Happened?
Like, are we all going to be like making, you know, $15 million a week and paying like, you know, $80,000 for toast and coffee?
We won't be as bad as what they did to Germany in 1919. But what they have done, because private people, this all gets back, private people are printing our money. It's like you getting something done at the Xerox place. You go, you get a Monopoly game, and they print it out for you, and you go and say, okay, mm-hmm. I'll pay you now for printing all these papers for me. And they say, wait a minute. Now you have to pay interest on those numbers we put. Would you give that to the Xerox people? They should only be paid for printing the money. They shouldn't get interest on the numbers they printed. That's insane.
Well,
everyone seems
okay with it. That's what we're all doing.
Because we don't know anything. Back in the 30s, people who went to school learned about the way money works. We don't learn anything now. What we learn that's called economy and university, we learn the financial scam. Finance means lending. Economy means saving. Economy is our environment. Finance means lending. That's all it's ever meant. So if you continue borrowing from private people who can issue as much paper as they want, the money is devalued. You're getting nothing for the money you're paying, and they will continue what I call overprinting. So in 1919, when they did the deal on Germany and said you owe us $1,000 trillion in gold and all that, so that the Germans, the ordinary Germans, were starving in the street, they said at Versailles to America, to the feds, and I mean the people who run that bank, that's not even an American bank. They said, "You can be the reserve dollar for the planet on two conditions. You do not overprint, okay? And you do not make the price of gold any higher than $35 an ounce." Well, has the Federal Reserve done that? No. They are printing like crazy, $15 billion or something every month. They're getting interest on it. They own the globe for their phony paper and numbers, okay? And unless people have the backbone to stand up against that, we don't have any hope on this planet. We will be owned and enslaved by the people, the private group who prints our money, and maybe there's 300 or 400 of them. They're all intermarried. They all know each other. And they're all Zionists. Excuse me. Yes, they are. And Rothschild is quite proud of it. He says Israel, he bought Israel. The British government owed him a lot of money. And he called in his markers. And I have the letter. It was done by Balfour. It's called the Balfour Declaration. And in it, Balfour says in the letter, "And we approve of the Zionist ambitions. We approve," and he says to them, he knows they're Zionists, and he says that.
Right.
"We approve of the Zionist plan for Palestine, blah, blah." So the currency problem, the Federal Reserve, the Palestinian problem, they're all tied in together.
Okay, so
they're all part of one plan that will bring this planet to its knees.
Okay, well,
and will ruin our environment.
All right, well, listen, we've only covered two or so of the topics, and you've already got us at the end of the world, so I hope we have time to cover some of the other topics.
Well, the other topics are Sumer. I knew Zechariah Sitchin. This is the gentleman who is a sumerologist and has died recently, about a year ago. I think he was 90. He wrote The 12th Planet and the subsequent six or seven books. Zechariah Sitchin, I knew him. I had many conversations with him, and I will be talking about the hidden history of the world, the history we're not allowed to know.
Okay, why are we not allowed to know it?
Because it negates a lot of religions. It explains a lot of religions and how they all started.
Okay.
So the religious community, whatever religion that is, how many there are, they don't approve of people knowing where all the religions actually came from. So that's a very controversial subject. And the universities don't have any of his books, even though he was mentored by Noah Kramer, whose books are in the university. But I have a letter from Zechariah Sitchin himself explaining to me that his teacher, Noah Kramer, said to him, and I have this in Zechariah's writing,
okay,
said to Zechariah, if I had not said that what I was translating were myths, I would not have had my professorship. I would not have been able to publish a book.
Right.
I had to say that what I was transcribing from the thousands of tablets were myths. Now, Zechariah Sitchin does not say that. He has said they are not. They are history. They are ancient history. And so his books are not allowed in the universities because of the way the universities are funded. They are funded with a bias.
Well, I think it's amazing that not only are they funded with a bias, they are set up now to immediately set each and every student deeply in debt as soon as the kid graduates. Happy start to your life.
That's right.
Maybe you can shake this by the time you're 30.
Yep.
Read the fine print on that thing.
That's right, because a lot of the donations come from the banking community.
Sure, and they're right in there. They're right in there on Frosh Week with the little tent set up trying to get you on a credit card, you know,
right
away. Oh, yeah.
Right, and the other community is the Bible community. So,
what are you going to say about them?
Well,
we'll be right back. I'm just kidding. Go right ahead. Say it right now.
No, I've done lectures on Bible myths.
Okay.
Bible myths throughout the last 15 years. And, of course, there are a lot of decent people of all religions. But basically, religions themselves are a form of social control.
Mm-hmm.
And this is done through fear, of course, and they need rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, if you go into the subject, psychiatric subject, and you know what an OCD is, an obsessive compulsive disorder,
uh-huh,
a lot of religions fit that category. Because in an OCD, you need rituals constantly to make you feel good and to keep the fear that's created by that form of social control. You need to keep the fear away with rituals. So it falls into the category of an OCD.
Well, ritual is an OCD, or an OCD is a ritual.
It's part of it. You need a ritual if you're suffering from one.
Yeah.
That makes the bad feeling go away.
Hopefully, for a little while anyway.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you're also, now tell us a little bit about, let's get to this now. We were just spending some time talking about the bankers and the horrible deal that we have to pay all this extra interest, ridiculously so. What are you chipping away at vis-a-vis Iceland? This is where they actually arrested
Iceland,
some people.
Yeah, well, that's the only time they said, you know, you have to go to prison because you have scammed us, you have cheated us. Some of these bankers actually ended up in jail. And the thing about Iceland was...
Isn't that great? Oh, that just sounds great, that sentence. You know, some of these bankers ended up in jail. That sounds
perfect.
That's
right.
Need more of that.
That's right.
Got to get some more of that going.
Yeah. So Iceland actually showed the world, you know what? You can do it. You can actually stop this horrible debt and depopulation scheme, because more deaths have been caused by debt than any other cause on the earth. Debt will cause depopulation. People can't afford to feed anyone in their country because the IMF has come in there and they said, fine, we'll lend you money. But if we lend you money, you have to restructure your economy so you can't grow what you need for food anymore. You've got to grow what we tell you to grow. And then when you get any monies from growing what we want, from exporting it, then you have to take that money and pay us interest on our loan. So that is another silly plan that will only depopulate and bankrupt everybody. But this comes out of the Federal Reserve as well. It's not federal. It has no reserve. It isn't a system. It's a scam.
Hmm.
And it's also a form of invisible slavery.
Well, because this is the thing, is people think about, you know, you talk about this kind of stuff to people and say, hey, you know, I'd love to get into a conversation about this, but I have to head over to my second or third job today because I'm trying to pay the bills.
That's right.
You know, and it's like, yeah, if we all knew why and how this magic trick was going on, we wouldn't have to do the second or third job to pay the bills. It's ridiculous.
That's right.
Like, I can't believe how we can't afford things anymore. I live in the city of Toronto. And in the city of Toronto, there's a river that runs through it. And in that river is the silt and the raw materials to make bricks. And for years and years and years, Toronto, you know, had these brick homes and everybody had bricks. And they would even ship them out to other cities in the country. And, you know, they figured out a way to make bricks out of, you know, at the side of a river. It's perfect. Perfect. However, now it's too expensive, apparently. You know, they don't even make bricks there anymore because, you know, they can't afford it. And every time I hear this lie, I just think, you know, what can't we afford? We could afford jets that cost into the billions of dollars. We can afford this, but we can't afford this other stuff that makes us an actual place to live.
We can afford things that kill people, but we can't afford anything that helps people stay alive.
Compassionate conservatism. That's what they call a compassionate conservatism, or whatever they called that thing.
Yeah, another oxymoron.
Absolutely.
So that's what's happening. That we're being told we can't afford all kinds of things we really can't afford. All you have to say back to them as well, if you can print out $15 billion extra dollars every month and send it to kill people in other countries, then we're able to print out $15 billion to help people survive. Of course we can.
Yeah.
So it's just a big lie, and even a child with an IQ would realize that. I can afford 20 little plastic cars, but I can't afford a sandwich for lunch. Come on. Even a kid knows better.
And that's true.
So I'll be going into the hidden history of the world and the Bible myths and, of course, mind control, having to do with a lot of the drugs. A lot of people are on drugs now, prescription drugs, SSRIs. And that's another thing where they can't pay attention to what's going on. Their mind's being controlled by a psych drug. And, of course, the other drugs they're using on the poor kids in the army are drugs to make them bypass their conscience so they can get used to committing atrocities. So that all comes under Big Pharma. So really, if I were to make a title and say, this is the title of what's really happening on this planet, this is who runs this planet, would be the banks, the Bible, and Big Pharma.
The Bible. So does that sit
the
in
banks,
for all
the
religion?
The Bible and Big Pharma.
But as far as the Bible concerned, is that just, you know, Christianity or Judeo-Christianism or Judeo-Christianity or every single kind of religion, and the Bible is emblematic?
Well, let's put it this way. The Hindu religion is the oldest on the earth. the only one with, what is it called, everyone's job. Your whole life is governed by what work you do. They have a caste system, okay?
Right.
That's 10,000 years old. Christianity, Judaism are come out of the same thing, the Old Testament, but also the Quran acknowledges that, with them, Jesus as a prophet. And the Quran, of course, says that you cannot have usury. So there are good things in every religion, but what I'm saying basically is that that's not the history of the world. The history of the world goes much further back than any of those books, and it goes further back than Hinduism or any other religion. I'm not saying religions are evil. I'm saying there's good people and evil people in every group, even religions. When a religion is used for the wrong purposes, yes. Some people in there might be good, but some are not. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it is. So you have censorship, you have surveillance, I talk on that. And then you have the citizen lab rat. I mean, citizens are lab rats.
All right, tell us about this. Spend a bit of time on this, because I remember hearing you go over this in the past, and this is quite fascinating. Tell us how we are all lab rats.
Well, I've got 3 pages of dates, and they've sprayed many, many cities in North America starting in 1933. They were spraying cities with all kinds of stuff. They were testing on people. Now they have the vaccines. And, of course, you know the history of vaccines. A vaccine has never cured anything. It didn't cure polio, and then they put the other virus into the vaccine, and they're very dangerous now. So they're still being pumped up by the drug companies, get your vaccine. But they've never cured anything, and sometimes they've made people very ill. So that's what's happened with the polio vaccine. So I do talk about those, and it comes under the heading of citizen lab rat. Let me see. Oh, no, by the way, they dug up the 1918 plague. They dug up the bodies in the ice, and they mailed...
The Spanish flu.
No. This came from, I think, pigs in North America. It was taken to Europe by the soldiers in 1918, but it's the one that killed how many millions, I can't tell you. But the bodies that died and were in ice, they went to Norway, I think it was, and they dug them up, and they sent back the plague in the mail back to their labs in the States. So now they have the germs from the 1918 plague. Hmm. And they said that's in case it happens again, they're going to find out how to fix it. But, of course, I don't believe that.
How about don't release it in the first place?
Exactly. I asked them why they dug it up in the first place.
Yeah.
And they said, well, I think we need information in case it happens again.
Oh, that's,
and I looked at them and I said, what do you mean in case?
Yeah. In case it happens.
So that's what that was about. So they're still working on that. And, the vaccines, I just call it murder in the first. That's what that is. And, of course, censorship is even worse now than it's ever been. So you need whatever information you can get under the radar, you need to get it out there.
Yeah.
So that's what I try and do.
Now, you know this fella Obama. You've heard of him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when he wraps it up and they go through the circus again of finding another Republican contender, oh, that was pretty funny last time. And then who is really calling the shots at that point when we're just, you know, looking at the next clown to observe, say a silly thing or make some silly remark and put our focus all on that? Who is calling the shots when it comes to election time as they shepherd us through 4 more years of either the same thing or change, and either way, mm-hmm. It's neither.
Somebody asked me once in the class when Obama was first coming up to be elected and voted for, and they said, well, will it make any difference? And I said, it doesn't matter if it's Obama or Osama. It'll be the same agenda.
That's right. It seems they're to be always, very... No,
it's the bankers are still running things, okay? They bought Congress. Congress does what they're told. So whoever comes in, it doesn't matter. Since the Kennedy assassination, which was a coup, a complete coup, we haven't had anything in the U.S. except for puppets. They're all puppets of
since
the banking,
Kennedy.
The Fed, since Kennedy, yeah. That was a coup. We haven't had a president who wasn't a puppet since.
That is, that's harsh.
We haven't
medicine.
Had anybody who's going to tell it like it is. No, we haven't. Well, the people I know in the States, I worked in the States a long time, and they've been calling them for years the Republicrats. They know they're all one party.
Mm-hmm.
So in one of my lectures is entitled, it's just one party, and we're not invited.
And they just run the whole thing.
And that, well, that means Canada as well. It's just one party, and we're not invited.
Yeah. As long as we pay up.
Well, I don't think we're still not invited, no matter what we pay. We're persona non grata at any of these private events.
So what other things? Let me ask you about a different topic and just take a little topic, because you know there's a sense of despair in that one, and maybe we'll come back to it. But wow, I mean this stuff is so. I mean I know it is dark. There's no getting around it. But let me ask you about this. What I heard recently, relatively recently, was that HARP was decommissioned. Now, what's your take on what HARP is and what any kind of an announcement of decommissioning really means?
Well, I know what HARP is. It's a lot of antennas, probably 144, whatever, as I can remember last. But it can move the ionosphere. It can change the weather. And I don't know what they mean by decommissioning HARP. Maybe they'll turn it off for a little while, but we're not the only people with HARP. China has HARP. There's other countries that have their own versions of HARP. And it's all about controlling weather. What they say here in the States is that, oh, HARP is so that they can't send missiles. You know, they'll throw the missiles off. They raise the ionosphere. The missiles can't hit their targets. That's not what it's about at all. And if you need to know about HARP, I know the one man who's the expert on this. And he lives in Alaska.
Nick Begich, I bet you're going to say.
That's right. Nick Begich, I've heard him speak. He came to Toronto several times.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was governor of Alaska. And the time they were building HARP, his father went in a small plane with a friend of his, another congressman, to warn people that they were building HARP and what it was about. Their plane went down, and it's never been found.
Hmm.
So that was Nick Begich's father, who was governor in Alaska. So I'm imagining that Begich took over because of what was going on then, and he has written books on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to get him on the show sometime.
Yeah, he's on the net, and I believe you can find him under Earth Pulse. Now, I'm not sure, but I think he's under Earth Pulse.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
And that's Nick. And, of course, that's what HARP is, and it can move the ionosphere. It can change the weather. And another little use they have for that is that it can start earthquakes.
Okay, now, has it? And is there any information that would, you know, verify this claim, even though it's likely and possible?
Yeah, there have been theories in the past that they said, yes, it had done that. I think even in Fukushima, I think they said it had a hand in that.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else said it had a hand in the New Orleans when that was flooded out, and tsunamis, the one in Indonesia at one time. But they can't prove anything, but they know what HARP can do. So, yes, and they know it can change the weather. They've seen that happen, and the Air Force will admit that now. They said, oh, yeah, we own the weather now. We can
can
cause droughts. And, of course, Wall Street is benefiting from that because they make money on futures because they're aware, they know what crops are going to be destitute of water, because you can plan that. You can take water from crops, not let the rain fall. You can make it cold, you can make it warm. So they control the futures, and the people who know that and are betting on the futures are making a hell of a lot on Wall Street, and they love weather control.
Hmm. That sounds like a very lucrative game.
Yes, it is.
Let me ask you this then. So you say it could cause an earthquake.
Yes, so people have thought it has at certain times, but as they say, there's no proof.
And what if it caused an earthquake such as Fukushima?
Well, it could have, the tsunami that happened.
Yeah, as a result of.
Yes, because what it can do, HAARP can pierce through the earth. It can pick a target under the earth, say on a fault line.
Okay.
It can pick a target, and it's able to strike that target from within the earth on a fault line. And this, according to their own explanation of what it can do, this is what happens. It can start an earthquake.
Hmm.
Just by targeting a fault line and sending one of those tremors through.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. This is kind of a devil's advocate question. It's really uncomfortable, but I'm going to ask you anyway. In a world where someone has deliberately triggered the disaster that has become what we know as the Fukushima meltdown,
mm-hmm.
that guy that caused this, or those series of people that caused this, also live on this planet. Yes? So why? I mean, it's like, you know, shitting in your own dinner.
Yeah.
So.
That's right.
How, what kind of person thinks, how would they even say, okay, you know what we're going to do here is we're going to make this thing radioactive and bleed it out into the atmosphere. And I mean, do I need to bring a Geiger counter mm-hmm. next time I go grocery shopping or to a restaurant from now on? You know, what kind of person? They're also breathing the same air and living in the same radioactive environment.
Mm-hmm.
So what? How do they think they can get through that unscathed?
Well, psychopaths have a peculiar logic. Secondly, the people that do that just say, let's just do a small amount. Let's just show people what we can do. A third explanation... Are you there?
Yeah, sure.
A third explanation is called the Samson option.
Okay.
You try to get us, you're going to come down with us. So there's three things here. There's the psychopathic logic. For instance, this has always been my definition of a psychopath, and I assume most doctors would say this as well. If you have a normal person, but he's a thief, but he's fairly normal mentally. He's doing it for money. He's not harming anyone. He's going through a home in the middle of the night. As he's picking up jewelry, watches, whatever, he hears a baby start to whimper. He knows that soon the baby will cry, the parents will hear, he'll be caught. He leaves with whatever he's collected. The psychopath going through the house and robbing the house gets so far he hears the whimper. He simply goes into the baby's room and puts his hand over the baby's face until the baby stops breathing.
Right.
He doesn't hate the baby. He doesn't love the baby. He is emotionally detached.
Right.
That is a psychopath.
Okay.
However, being a psychopath and having no conscience sometimes means that you're going to be the head of something, the leader, the top gun, because you will stop at nothing. That's a psychopath, okay?
Right. But what
of
them?
The second thing is...
You're saying they run everything. That's what...
Well, they do. They do because they gave a test to a lot of corporate CEOs. They didn't tell them what the test was about. And they all passed it with flying colors, and it was a test for psychopathy.
Oh, nice.
Are you a psychopath?
And they all were.
They didn't know what the test was about. They all came through with flying colors. So it means if you're not hindered by conscience, You're not winning because you're smarter. You're winning because you will do what a normal human person will not do.
Yeah, transcend boundaries that...
That's why it's not your brain. It's your lack of conscience that gets you ahead, even when it comes to your own children. So the same group that did Fukushima, they might have said to themselves, okay, let's do just a little bit. We'll just do this here in Japan. And everyone that knows who we are will realize, hey, they really mean it. Just show them what we can do. Intimidation. But they're not that smart. So what they don't realize is that the whole Fukushima thing will eventually get to the Southern Hemisphere. And they'll be screwed as well.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, why would you do that to
because
yourself?
Psychopathic logic does include the Samson option.
Huh.
If you're going to kill me, I'll take you with me.
Yeah.
And I'll do you first.
Huh.
So those are the three parts of the psychopathic logic, as I call it. It's not, but this is theirs. You know?
Okay.
Number one, we don't care. Number two, we want to intimidate people. And number three, if worst comes to worst, you're coming with us.
Yeah. Do you, in your course, do you talk at all about brotherhoods and sects such as Masons or Templars or anything like that?
I think the Masons got a bad rap because they're infiltrated. I had Jesuit professors which mentioned nothing about religion and were very good at math and sciences, although they're blamed for a lot as well. But I don't, that's not what I believe, okay? I've had too much experience. So, yes, there's all kinds of sects. You can have a secret club doing anything. But, you know, from kids down the back lane, you know, the submarine races, on up to sects who believe that, you know, you have to sacrifice a baby or you have to have rituals. There's all kinds of groups that are not normal. They're genetically, you know, they have flaws. Let's put it that way. Flaws
to
that
put
can't
it mildly.
Be helped. But at Miley, they have flaws that can't be helped. So they're poor souls, you know, parts of their brains, ethics not functioning. So they're not going to... Humanity is supposed to evolve and progress. Humanity is supposed to become better and better.
Oh, yeah? Is that what's supposed to be happening?
Even people who aren't Christians or from other religions, even the Egyptians... If you read the Bible scholars, not the Bible thumpers, but the scholars, you will realize that in Egypt, before Christianity, they had the symbol of the cross, and the Egyptian philosophy was everyone has a divine spark. Everyone partakes of the divine spark. And in their religion, the Christos, which didn't mean a person. The Christos was the divine spark, and they believed we all had that. Now, when Christianity came along, instead of the Christos in everybody, they said the Christos is only in one man, and you have to be saved through that one man. So if you read the Bible scholars, that's the understanding that most of them have. That we all have a divine spark, but we have to work on it. You have to decide, am I going to use my divine spark, or I have the choice, or I could go to the dark side. That's our choice, because if we evolve, we have to make those choices. You can't evolve if someone else is making them for you.
Or if you're making the wrong ones.
Oh, exactly, but that's what evolution is. We have to decide, are we going to have ethics or not have ethics? Is it okay to kill another human being? If they attack you, yes, you have to defend yourself. But to kill them for money, to kill them because you enjoy it, to kill them as part of a lab rat test, this is the dark side, okay, if you want to be simple about it.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. It's very dark.
And so to pretend that it's anything else, or to pretend that a war is about, oh, they're going to attack us, or we know better and God likes us better, that's just a front. It's always about grabbing the other guy's stuff.
Yeah. On that front, what do you think about ISIS?
ISIS? I think it's the usual group that's been stirring up civil wars everywhere. The same group that went into Iraq and killed off all the scientists before they invaded.
Oh, right.
ISIS is given money by the U.S. Come on, it's part of their FBI, CIA, Mossad combo. They go over there to do that. They want countries fighting, and they want everybody fighting with everybody. In the meantime, they drag out all the resources.
Yeah. It's
the same damn group.
This is kind of morbid, but let me say this to you. Have you seen the video of, I watched a video, okay, and it wasn't that I was having any kind of bloodlust, but everyone was talking about it, and I thought, okay, I want to see this video of one of the journalists, the first one, beheaded by this British accent-speaking ISIS member.
Mm-hmm.
And, now, I find it unusual that here's this terrible organization, and they have this video where mm-hmm. he explains the manifesto and why this guy is going to die, and then he goes to behead the guy, and the film just kind of cuts out and changes a little bit, and then they go back and show it with the body with the head sitting on the chest to prove it, that it's real. And I just don't understand. Why doesn't that thing just play right through? Why is it, who is being so careful as to edit this thing each time?
Okay.
And why?
Okay, so we know what's going on, all right? We know what happened with 9/11. We know if it's like anything, it's like Hollywood. Okay? Hollywood. It's about editing. It's about cutting. It's about intimidation. It's about an appearance. It's not what is really happening. It's what people perceive as happening. And they're doing that all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
As I said, Hollywood is the propaganda ministry. Hitler had a propaganda ministry. It even had the title Over the Door and all that. But nobody talks about that anymore, and there's no courses in any university analyzing propaganda, because you'd be analyzing your school.
No one has that at all.
Nobody. There's one guy in England, and there's me in North America.
And the
professor,
the
professor in England came here a few years ago with this film, and... And I'm quoting him now. I can't remember his name, but he's the only one in England, the British Isles, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the meeting, he brought his film, and he said, I always called myself a professor, studies in propaganda. And he said, then I realized I couldn't call myself that because I wasn't saying anything about Palestine. Now I'm quoting him now. And he said, now I talk about it, or else how can I call myself a professor of studies in propaganda? Now, that's what he said. So it's a very strange thing because, as I said, between the religions, the so-called education, which really isn't, it's more or less indoctrinations, different indoctrinations.
Well, yeah, I think it's people don't really want to know that they have been indoctrinated on the one hand. And then on the other hand, the people that are doing the indoctrinating, of course, they don't want to draw attention to it.
No, they don't. So I've said to people in my class year after year, although I am an alumnus of the university, I've said unless it's It's hard science, hard math. Don't pay your money to learn it. Forget the liberal, the arts, all the other stuff you can get out of books. Don't bother paying the money they want you to pay now to learn something, and you'll probably have better authors than they have and more up to date.
Yeah, I was wondering if you put the 4 years' worth of tuition, instead of getting a loan for it, to like buy gold with it, and then and then study on your own, and then 4 years later see how that's doing, you'd probably be at least break even, which has got to be better than being in debt.
Yeah. Well, when I went to university, it was I graduated in 74. We weren't paying anything like that. I paid my loan off. I think it was $25 a month, and I might have paid it for 3 or 5 years or something. And we got grant. If you were not wealthy and you couldn't pay, then half your loan became a grant.
Right.
That was back in 74. But that's not what it's like now. The kids are being put through the thumb screws.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's a trap away. As soon as you're there, you're in debt, big time.
And you're in debt for something, as I say, unless you're learning the hard sciences, astronomy, unless you're learning maths, unless you're learning engineering. You don't go in and pay that kind of money for liberal arts.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
I know wonderful artists who've never been taught anything, but they're artists.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. You're right.
So the whole thing about, you have to be university framed. You have to have that piece of paper. I'm sorry. They've proven themselves that people can't use it if they're screwing up the economy.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're as valuable as they once were supposed to be.
Unless you've got a diploma in the hard sciences, no, they aren't.
No, no. So anyway, Sydney, we're just about ready to wrap up, but I wanted to say, let's take a stab at one more of your favorite topics that you're going to be discussing in this upcoming session, the semester of your studies in propaganda at the University of Toronto.
And if they want to see some of my previous lectures, they're on the net.
Okay.
All people have to do, there's at least 10 of them on there, as log in, put in Google, whatever, put in studies in propaganda, period, dot, whatever, Sydney White. The second way you can get them is Sydney White Lectures.
Okay, and we should say, too, that Sydney is with a Y, S-Y-D-N-E-Y.
Yeah. It's S-Y-D-N-E-Y, and White is spelled W-H-I. T-E. But on either way you can get it, Sydney White Lectures or Studies in Propaganda, Sydney White, will get some of those lectures. And I think they're on Vimeo.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yep. You're welcome.
And and what else are we going to, so you, if you got one more topic you're going to close out on?
No, I just wanted to say that I also, for relief, I write poetry. So I do give poetry readings around town. And I'll just leave you with one of my favorite one-liners that most people like.
Okay.
And it goes like this. I'd like to sell my soul to the devil, but I hate standing in line.
Perfect. Yeah. I guess there's too many people ahead of you for that.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Sydney, for talking with us. And we will try to send as many people over to your class as possible.
I think they'll enjoy it.
All right. Thanks very much.
Yep. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.